Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. Season 6, Episode 43, the Steelers 16-10 losers to the Cincinnati Bengals. They not only lost a football game, they lost a lot more than that in Le'Veon Bell having a torn MCL out for the season. I've also been told he has a torn PCL. Dave, congratulations to you guys. I think you guys were the first to break the story. Alex did. About 9:30 last night, sources close to Le'Veon Bell. The Steelers have obviously not confirmed this yet, but we've heard also your report confirmed by Adam Schefter and Ian Rappaport independently reporting this as well. So it looks bad for the Steelers in that respect. It sounds like they've actually I've seen conflicting things, that they've brought Isaiah Pede in, that they've actually agreed to terms with Isaiah Pede. I'm not sure quite how they can do that without announcing another roster move, because I don't think you can carry an extra guy for any period of time, 54 players. So I don't know that that has been confirmed by the Steelers, but that's where we are, Dave. Let's start with the game. We'll get into the injury and the long-term consequences, but a tough 16-10 loss that really kind of almost salts away the division for the Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah, boy, when you commit 10 penalties in a game and you turn the football over three times, I don't care who you are. It's going to be kind of tough to win a game like that. And, you know, we talked about ahead of that game, David, and I wrote about it, about how Roethlisberger has been un-Roethlisberger-like in his first games back from injury. And he was not Roethlisberger-like on Sunday against the Bengals. So the question is, you know, we talked about whether or not, you know, that needs to be a narrative. You didn't think, you know, really that it should be. Where do you stand on it now? Is that something that should be concerned? I mean, obviously he was able to get around. I thought, okay, he had a little gimp to him, probably as you would expect with having to wear a knee brace. But, you know, not stepping into his throws. He sailed quite a few of them in this game. And, you know, we'll talk about one of the interceptions, I'm sure, at some point here. You know, kind of a forced throw. All three of his interceptions came in the second half. Two of them resulted in 10 of the Bengals' 16 points. And we talk about those putos all the time. If you're not scoring a lot of points on offense, they certainly can't come back to bite you.
Yeah, Ben's performance, certainly at the end of the day, in totality, it wasn't good. And what's odd about the performance is he got worse as the game went on. And he spoke after the game. He took full responsibility, said he didn't at any point, you know, whether this is true or not, we none of us know, but he said at no point during the game did he think about his knee. Did it inhibit him from doing things, from making plays? He actually, you know, took off on a play that was called back for penalty and ran for 10 yards. So like you, it didn't seem to me like there was, you couldn't notice the knee impacting the game, but yeah, he was high with throws. That The last interception was, you know, as bad a ball as he's thrown all year. Sailed it over Antonio Brown, an easy pick for Nelson, the safety, in that one. You know, the first drive, he looked great. So I don't know if you say he you know, he got rusty. Obviously, you don't get rustier as the game goes on. It's a confusing performance to me. And then, you know, obviously losing Bell early in the second quarter, you wonder how that impacted things. The other part of that is he got no help from his receivers. Really, this is as poor a game as we've seen this receiving core as this group play probably ever. There were balls, you know, the crossing pattern early that Antonio Brown dropped. There was the pass in the end zone where they threw and picked up the flag to Martavis Bryant. That would have been a very difficult catch, but he didn't make. There were some other balls, you know, one that hit Marcus Wheaton in the shoulder as a guy put his hand up and just maybe slightly tipped it that he couldn't come down with. So it was just a really, really disappointing offensive performance after as good a first drive as you could possibly have.
Yeah, and I'm not ready to put a lot of that on the receivers, David, because a lot of those balls, and I think you'll see later in the week, I plan on trying to take snapshots of every one of those incomplete throws to see where to show where the ball placement was. You know, the most brutal of all the throws of his incompletion throws outside of the three interceptions, I thought was the throw to Martavis Bryant in the end zone. That went right through his hands. I'll watch that right. I watched that again right before we got on to do this podcast, and that was the most egregious, you know, I think of all of them there. A lot of the balls, deep balls that he threw in the game weren't overly accurate, and I think when I get this post together, David, later on in the week, I think you might kind of come off of that narrative a little bit. Now, keep in mind,
you didn't think AB had a drop over. You didn't think that he dropped that one over the middle, the cross early.
Well, I mean, like I said, I'm not fully absolving. I'm just saying that it probably wasn't as bad on the receivers as what you think. I mean, the receivers bailed him out on a couple of throws as well, too. I mean, Wheaton had to adjust to a wide ball. Antonio Brown had to go real low for at least one catch. Heath Miller had to go.
I wasn't including Heath in that, any of that.
Well, I mean, he had to go for one of his catches. He had to go low as well.
Heath had a great game for sure. I was talking about specifically the receivers.
Right, right. And like I said, maybe the AB drop that you referenced, and then, of course, the throw in the end zone to Martavis Bryant, which was a very catchable ball, went right through his arms. But I don't know. We'll see when I get this post together later on in the week. Here's something that I kind of found, I don't want to say disturbing. I should say more kind of shocked when they first came back from injury for Roethlisberger. He threw more than 16 yards. Now, keep in mind that a deep pass in the NFL, whenever you see in the play-by-play of throws that are considered a deep, whether it be, you know, right, left, middle, are considered throws of 16 or more yards in the air past the line of scrimmage. He had 15 such passes like that. Now, that included two attempted passes that were those plays were canceled out by penalties. But 15 times in the game, according to my initial numbers, he threw deep down the field. He only completed 3 of those 15 passes, and all 3 of his interceptions were on passes thrown 15 or more yards in the air past the line of scrimmage. I was pretty shocked, you know, that number was that high. And additionally, 8 of those 15 deep passes traveled 20 or more yards in the air past the line of scrimmage, and none of them were completed. So, you know, I decision making on his part to try to go deep and get the chunk plays, whether or not somebody was open, you know, we're really not going to know that and get a better look at that until the All 22 is released. Now, of his 28 pass attempts that flew 10 or less yards past the line of scrimmage, he only failed to complete just 5 of those throws. And on the 4 throws of his that he had between 11 and 15 yards, he completed 2 of them. I just was you know, pretty shocked that he had so many deep throws in the game.
It was, you know, I don't know what to say. This game didn't at all follow kind of what we all expected. I mean, you know, I suggested both teams would score over 30 points, and you might need 40 to win this one. I mean, the one thing that fits is the turnovers were crucial in this game. I mean, it really looked like the Steelers were set to win this game when Andy Dalton made as bad a decision and throw, and Antoine Blake made a good play on the pick in the corner of the end zone. And from my view in the press box, I was staring right down the barrel of the gun of that play from the angle that I had. Dalton on his roll right was kind of right in my line of sight with the receiver. And there was a guy out into the flat. And when I looked at the play, the first thing I saw is the guy in the flat. And I said, well, he's going to have to hurry that throw to give that guy time to turn up and get in the end zone. And he obviously didn't go to that receiver. He went to the other receiver. And as I'm seeing that, you know, as I have this kind of thing breaking right in front of me, I said, well, he's going to have to throw that to the back of the end zone. That's the only place he's going to be able to get it to him. And obviously he doesn't. He throws it to the front, and Blake goes and breaks well on the ball and makes the catch and has a really good return. And it felt like that was the moment that the Steelers were going to win that game right there. And obviously the offense, you know, just didn't get it done. I mean, the offense was terrible. I mean, there's not much to say about it other than that opening drive when Ben was, I think, 5 for 6 for 43 yards. The offense was inconsistent all day. Penalties were obviously a disaster in this game, as you pointed out. The 3 turnovers contribute to, you know, losses of possessions. So, and they didn't convert on third down. I think they converted 3 third downs the whole game and 2 of them on that opening drive. So, the Steelers team, you know, we can say whatever we want about what this offense is supposed to be. And certainly, you know, we'll point to Ben coming back from injury and we'll point to Le'Veon Bell not playing most, you know, more than, you know, a quarter of this game. But the reality is in the last 2 games Ben has played, the Steelers put up 12 points and then they put up 10 yesterday with the Bengals. And that's just not close to what we've been expecting from them.
If I gazed into my crystal ball for you ahead of the game and I told you, David, that the Bengals were 4 of 15, 27% on third downs in the game, how much of a guarantee would you have given me that the Steelers won that game?
And they get 2 picks, I'd be at, you know, 80%.
The problem is that the Steelers were also 27% on third down, 3 of 11, as you said, and they did have the extra turnover in the game. I think explosive plays were pretty much even on both sides of the football. In fact,
I know in the first half there were none. It was just the biggest play was a 22-yard PI called on for Antonio Brown.
The Steelers had 2? 4.
4. What, it passed the Heath for 25. D'Angelo ran for 55. What were the other 2?
You had, let's see, here they are in length. D'Angelo Williams, 55 yards. That happened in the third quarter, 1:45 left. 29-yard pass over the middle to Heath Miller. That happened in the third with 10:39 left. A 25-yard pass deep middle to Heath Miller in the third quarter with 9:03. And then a 21-yard pass to Martavis Bryant with 12 seconds. Left in the game. The Bengals had, looks like, 5 explosive plays in the game, 1 in the first half, and that was the 2nd and 7 deep pass to A.J. Green down the left side for 20 yards exactly. So the Bengals not only won the explosive play count, they by 1, they won the turnover battle by 1, and if you add 1 and 1 together in the talk stats, you get a +2, and if you're +2 in the talk stat in any given game, you have an 80% chance of winning it.
All right, Dave, so let's talk about the good on the defensive side. A really, really good performance. The unfortunate thing is obviously, you know, they gave up the ghost at the end. The key play in the game for me was, I mean, look, we can pick different things, obviously. To me, it was the play where on third and maybe 3 or 2 or 4, I can't remember exactly that the distance, but Andy Dalton drops back to pass. James Harrison gets both hands on him. And if you saw the replay on television, I think you'll remember, he literally has both hands kind of around his rib cage, but obviously he's being blocked at the time. Dalton steps up and basically shovel passes a ball forward to Giovanni Bernard, who kind of inexplicably, in my mind, he had trouble with the pass blocking, I guess is the reason, but, you know, didn't touch the ball 1 time in the first half and hardly, I don't think at all in the third quarter, but he took it, I think, 25 yards on that play, and that set up the opportunity for them eventually to hit A.J. Green on the quick slant for the touchdown. And, yeah, you know, you get that stop there, and they're settling for another field goal, and another field goal, you know, obviously would have been the difference.
Yeah, and obviously that drive came after the 1-play or 2-play drive that Roethlisberger had the pass that he forced to Will Johnson. Now, a lot of people will say, Will Johnson's got to do a better job of coming back to that football, which, okay, yeah, I'm willing to give you that. But do you think Will Johnson has to work on such a thing in a situation like that? I'm not absolving him of that.
I have exactly the same opinion. Exactly the same. Look, you weren't throwing it to a wide receiver who does this all the time. Will Johnson catches 10 balls a year. He's generally running, getting a wheel route or a screen pass. That's not his skill set. Yeah, should he have done better, and will he know next time? Probably. But, you know, It's
why not just, it's second and six. Why not just throw the football away?
Well, of course, you know, that's,
yeah,
you,
but
I've seen Ben make millions of plays, so kind of
right. And boy, he looked, you want to talk about a play that he looked like he moved okay on. He managed to get outside of the pocket for a long amount of time on that and kind of try to wait for things to develop. But, you know, yeah, that was a huge turnover there. With when did that happen? Something like 5:46 left in the fourth quarter, and you know you provide them with a short field because the Bengals took over at the Steelers' 45-yard line at that point. And then, as you mentioned, the the ensuing third down and five play, boy, I mean, if it's and butts were candy and nuts, and Harris is able to get to Dalton on that, you know, the huge play in that situation for sure. And you know, that was at the 40-yard line. So, I mean, they're not even guaranteed a legitimate field goal opportunity at that time.
Okay, let's get to the, you know, elephant in the room. Did Mike butcher the clock?
I understand where he was trying to come from in his post-game press conference. Does that mean that I would have taken the time. Here's my thoughts, David. I'm an optimist, okay? I always have more faith probably in something than I probably should. And the reason I kind of say that is if I'm the head coach of the Steelers and Ben Roethlisberger is my quarterback, I have faith that the more time I give him, the more likely he is to be able to drive the length of the football field, regardless of the timeout situation. That's my thought. So with that saying, I'm obviously going to call the timeout there at 2:38. Now, we can get into the whole space-time continuum, right? I mean, if you call a timeout, how does it change maybe the complexion of the Bengals play calling? Are we to assume that they're just going to run the same three plays?
I think it's fairly safe to assume they're going to run the ball twice.
And you know, are they going to get aggressive in some of those, knowing that there's a good chance the Steelers will get the ball back?
I mean, you know, the scenario played out like it did. I mean, they didn't get aggressive. They made the Steelers use their other two timeouts. So I don't know that there's much reason to expect them to play it differently with 2:35 left versus 2 minutes left.
Well, because of the fact that if they did run three straight times, the Steelers get it back after the field goal ahead of the 2 minute warning.
Right. But the point is the Steelers got it back with a timeout. So there's going to be there's one clock stoppage either way. I mean, I think running the risk of throwing
the difference of the 2 minute warning and a timeout is you don't get to control when it's called, obviously.
Right. And as you said, but you do get to control your play calls with 30. I mean, there are a couple of different points here on this. And, you know, the play they ran that, you know, when on first down from the Steelers 26, Hill goes over right tackle. That play took about 4 seconds, 3 or 4 seconds. So the Steelers, I'm watching the clock in the press box at 2:38. The whistles, the play has stopped, and the Steelers can call. I looked dead at the clock when he's tackled, and it's 2:38. So the play took like 3 seconds. Now we know factually, the two plays they ran after the two minute warning, they took 4 seconds, and I think they used a total of 9 seconds. It was like 1:51 when they kicked the field goal left. So we know these plays that they were running were taking 4 or 5 seconds. So I've heard some people say, well, it only would have saved them 8 or 10 seconds. Well, maybe. I mean, that would have been significant anyway. But the point is they could have saved 38 seconds. Mike's comment about wanting to use the middle of the field, to me, why I find that kind of – I understand wanting to have a timeout. If you have a timeout versus not having a timeout, you'd rather have the timeout. It makes sense. And the Steelers – the point is, though, the Steelers used the deep middle to Martavis. – You know, Ben gets sacked on first down, and all of this was almost moot. But they get the Martavis, and then they get the pass interference, so they get a first down at their 30. And then, you know, the Steelers were using the middle of the field, and they called the timeout when they get to the 50. And that wasn't, you know, that was to the short left pass to D'Angelo Williams for 12 yards. There are 33 seconds left. So basically, again, when we talk about things, they went from, you know, 147, I think, after the kickoff to 33 seconds. And I thought Ben was doing a good job of getting them to the line of scrimmage, by the way. But it's like a minute and 12 seconds. And again, you know, you get you're at the 50-yard line, right? So you've gained whatever you got, 30 yards in that period of time. They got a bunch of plays off. And, you know, they continued to use the middle of the field without the timeout. So, you know, Mike was willing to do it. And I just think having that 38 seconds like you do, that, you know, if you want to spike a ball after you get a first down, you have that option. You know, you can do some different things. It's just I can't justify 38 seconds. If somebody said in the game, we'll give you a choice of 38 seconds or a timeout, I say, look, I can do a lot of different things with 38 seconds. I can throw three plays that can be incompletions that stop the clock. I can spike a ball. I can effectively use it as a timeout, a play as a timeout. It flabbergasts me. I mean, 38 seconds is just way too much time in this situation to think that the trade-off for the timeout is better. And you do get, as you said, you don't control the timeout at the two-minute warning, but you get a clock stoppage that you know is there, and so you can build your play call around that as well.
Well, like I said, maybe Mike Tomlin is not as much of an optimist as I am. My decision would be based on the fact that I want to give my quarterback as much time as possible, regardless of the timeout situation. Now, I somewhat understand where he's coming from, but I mean, I think too, you know, if it was a 3-point game instead of a 6-point game, would that have changed your thoughts on this any?
I don't think so. Did you actually think was a 3-point game?
I actually did.
I thought you were joking about it. And then I read.
I actually did. My math was down.
Wasn't working right.
I was. I don't know what I was thinking. I was like, it was like that field goal never happened.
Right.
And it didn't register. You got to remember now. I only sleep like 2 hours a day, so sometimes it takes, you know, all those protons and neutrons time to work together in certain situations. And I actually thought at the time. In fact, after that, after Martavis Bryant caught that ball, I thought, all right, roll the balls out there. Let's get this thing into overtime. Total brain, you know what, on my part. But I mean, regardless, I don't know. You know, obviously, you have to go a shorter distance if it was a 3-point game. I don't know how that changed. You know, it's too bad there's not a panel or something of former head coaches. But
why? That's the last thing I want is that those guys.
Yeah, that's probably a reason they're former head coaches, right?
Yeah, right. Please don't give me any coaches to talk on the topic. Let's get the 10 best 15-year-old Madden players.
Someone suggested need some sort of a Madden simulator.
I've talked about this a million times. I mean, it's exactly what they should do. I wanted to set up a facility where you could bring a coaching staff for a weekend and you just go through 1,000 game simulations and you could give them all headsets and, you know, put them under pressure in the environment somehow to simulate what they do, because they don't work on it. They do not work on it, period. And full stop, end of story. And look, I'm willing to say that this one isn't 100-0, but I'm pretty willing to say it's 90-10, and maybe 95-5, that he should have called a timeout there. There's no way you can convince me that 38 seconds is not worth more than a timeout. You just can't convince me of that.
With all this math nowadays, David, you know, you can program into that Madden simulator. You know, your probabilities and all like that. And if you fail below a certain, if you make a decision under a certain percentage of a probability, perhaps you get shot.
Yeah, there you go. That'll get them figuring it out fast.
What's the term for that when you, use,
Pavlov's dog.
There you go. Yeah, I love dogs. I mean, look.
What about in terms of let me ask you this. They have 12 seconds left. What I had said prior – well, let me say just another – just a quick point here on the play calling. They have 2nd and 10 at the 50, 28 seconds left, or 33 seconds left. They hit Heath, and it's over the middle. And then they run up to the play to the line, then fakes the spike and throws the out to Martavis Bryant. What was the point of that?
I did not. That infuriated me more than the than not calling a timeout.
Because,
there's nothing to gain in that situation.
Like way he turns that upfield the way the throw was made, the way he's running his route. I mean, he is sprinting to the sideline. And really, the defensive back played it really well. I'm not going to say he could have picked it off, but he was there to make the play, and he almost kept him in bounds. I mean, there are just all sorts of things with that. And that cost the Steelers 5 seconds. And 5 seconds is another play that they could have run at the end of the game.
Yeah, I don't quite understand that at all. That if you're going to do it, run it vertical.
Yeah, run it vertical. I mean, running it dead to the sideline for a two-yard game just was completely nonsensical, and, I didn't get it.
Boy, can you imagine if he didn't get out of bounds? Holy Moses.
Oh, that would have been we wouldn't talk about anything else. That would be catastrophic.
Now here's something that Alex kind of hit on Twitter, in defense of the timeout there is, you have a timeout in case you have one of those runoffs, because of penalty.
Well, that's a 10-second runoff, right?
Right.
Well, I mean, that happens.
That's just one thing that he threw out there,
Well, but they didn't have it after, after 33 seconds. So
right.
Let me ask you this. They got the pass to 16. They got down to the 16, right? They were at the 37. Would you have preferred on the play where they gained 16 yards, would you have preferred them to take two shots in the end zone? I'm assuming they could get off a play in under 12 seconds in the end zone. So let's say it takes 10 seconds. It doesn't really matter as long as it takes less than 12. But there's a small risk there. Would you have preferred to see them get take a shot in the end zone on that play, or did you like gaining, getting it so that you're, inside the 20 with one shot at it?
You mean on the next to last play?
Yes.
Well, I mean, they were giving the cushion underneath.
So you think they took what they gave them?
Yeah, they had to take that, in my opinion.
Okay.
Because then it did give you – I mean, heck, you had one shot
from
16,
right? It's a good shot. I mean, look, they only had one, but it's a good shot. And again, here, this is the question. It's not like it's fourth down. It is first down there, and that's why they had more time. They're running a lot more plays. They didn't have the time. Let me ask you this. How big a mistake was that by Ben? I mean, if you get picked.
If you get picked, right. You got to give a receiver.
I mean, let five guys run who's right in the middle of the field straight up in the air. I mean, you can't
throw
it up.
You never know. You get a pass interference call or something like that and get the ball one more shot at the one with no time on the clock. Yeah, you got to give the – and that's just yet another, bad throw by Ben in his game. You got to at least give your receiver a chance, I think. And Ben forced the ball into double coverage all day, right?
Yeah.
Not all day.
I mean, he almost got Heath killed.
Let's back up. How the heck did he hold on to that ball?
That was unbelievable. I mean, Heath is unbelievable. I mean, he is.
You told me a couple of years ago he's done. Did he not?
He's not the player he was, but he's still with the weapons around him and him working in the middle of the field. He is still. I mean, you're the first to say he's not the blocker he used to be, but he is still a dynamic guy, not dynamic, small word. He is still
smart, able to find areas on the field.
I mean, he
minimizes Pittsburgh.
I mean, what people want to think in terms of what he represents. He's humble. He gets the job done. He doesn't look for any recognition, and he just continues to make plays. I mean, like you said, the catch, holding on to that ball was remarkable. I mean, really, it was crazy. And then, he's rumbling down the field the next couple of plays, catching balls. Yeah, that was awesome.
A lunch pail type of guy, for
exactly.
Sure. Goes home after the game, doesn't say anything controversial. Always says the right things which isn't much. He's not a great interview, but heck, I don't fault him for that, right?
No, that's, no. I mean, you know, more guys should be bad interviews.
Yeah, absolutely. That should be. You would think that would be taught more than it already is, and I'm sure it's already taught a lot by a lot of these guys. But let's go back to the fourth quarter here. Early in the fourth quarter, third and 18 from the Bengals 33, and been sacked for a 2 yard loss. And then you had a little bit of extra time, I think, because I think Carlos Dunlap was injured on the play. There was a holding call.
Where are we? Give me the time.
We're early in the fourth quarter, 13:51. Yeah. Ben Roethlisberger's – it was a third and 18 play from the Bengals 33.
Okay.
And Ben was sacked for 2 yards. Dunlap was injured on that play, but Marcus Gilbert was called for holding. And the play was declined. So the Steelers had the ball, fourth and 20, on the Bengals 35. You rolling out the boss out there at home?
This is a decision to punt where he punts it 18 yards. Absolutely, I'm kicking the field goal. The kid's never missed in his pro career. You know, best case scenario, he punts it down to the 5. Worst case scenario, he does exactly what he did. And it turns out, you know, they run one play and they're exactly where they would have been had they, you know, Boswell missed the field goal. I mean, they get one play right up the middle to the backup tight end for something like 18 yards. And they're sitting right there. Now, you don't know that's going to happen. All right, whatever. I'll give it to you. But I was shocked.
I think I roll him out there just to see what he's got. The guy made some long kicks in college. I mean, at Rice, some extremely long kicks. He's got the leg. Now, of course, we don't know what the coaches saw during the warm up, the wind conditions,
wind,
you know, a lot of that,
you know, wind wasn't a factor,
a lot of the things that they go through in pregame.
Let me ask you this. Were you surprised the Bengals declined the penalty?
Because
it's the 35 yard line or it's the 43-yard line and another down. I'm thinking if it's the 35-yard line, they're probably kicking the field goal. So I might have taken the penalty, thinking that they would kick it.
Well, maybe they're thinking, too, that it gives them a better chance further back to pin them deep inside, you know, their own 10. Maybe that's the thing. That's a question for Marvin Lewis to answer there. But I think I would have tried to – in a close game like that, the way my defense is playing –
put you up a touchdown. You know, you get it's 10-6 at the time. Put you up a touchdown. I was, everybody thinks we're second guessing this stuff. You can just go to look at our Twitter timelines. I mean, I said, you know, I'm surprised he didn't send Boswell out there.
Overall, boy, the defense played well as a whole.
Consistent pressure, swarming to the ball, tackling in the Bumblebees. Get that? Swarming, pun intended.
There you go. I won't sting you for that comment.
I like it. I thought, you know, I thought the defensive backs did. I mean, like, you know, to a guy, I don't look at anybody and say they had a poor game. Nobody jumps to mind and say, you know, they didn't play well. They really, you know, you didn't notice the absence of Stephon Tuitt in this one. Timmons, I thought, had a good game, consistently getting pressure when he was asked to come. I didn't see a lot of Shazier, but I thought Cockrell did a nice job. I mean, Blake had the big interception. They're asking these guys a lot of times to play one-on-one on A.J. Green. Eifert didn't have a big game. I mean, just go down the list. I don't know what to say. I'm full of compliments for the defensive guys.
I mean, you had both your safeties, Golden and Mitchell. I thought played another set of solid games. The tackling, as you mentioned, was comparable to the game. Probably not as good against the Cardinals, but good. There were some runs by Jeremy Hill that you would like back over the right side, especially one kind of stretch there. I think in the middle there.
I'm a little surprised the Bengals ran so little and used Geo so little. Geo only carried one time. He got 12 yards out of it. And Hill, at halftime, he had 3 carries for 29 yards. So that's a pretty good average.
I wasn't so much shocked that Geo didn't get carries as much as I thought he was going to be used more in a passing game.
Right. And his only touch in the first half was a 1-yard loss on a pass play. That was his only touch.
I thought, you know, look, we know what the coaching staff definitely thinks about Cam Thomas right now, don't we? Because Cam Thomas only played a total of 12 snaps in that game, and the Steelers used Steve McClendon over there on the edge.
And that was definitely something that was happening in practice. You know, guys aren't allowed to talk about what they see in practice, but I know that that was when they were going – you know, we should call the nickel the base defense because it's the base defense. When they were using the nickel, McClendon was playing one of the two guys out there. We saw some of that the week before, but we saw a lot more of it this week.
And to be quite honest, we've heard about McClendon, quote-unquote, practicing at defensive end for weeks now, you know. But, I mean, this is really the first time that we've seen him play a lot of snaps as a true base defensive end, because keep in mind, Danny McCullers played 26 snaps in this game,
right,
and he certainly wasn't used as you know, as an end and all. They used him over the nose. So McClendon, you know, even though McClendon had a good spurt during that game, you know, against the Bengals, it overall wasn't his best game, and that's because he's playing out of position. You know, so look, this team needs Stephon Tuitt back, plain and simple, and hopefully that's going to happen, you know, next week against Raiders. But it is you know, a strike against Cam Thomas, because you know, if you heard Keith Butler talk after that game last week, he didn't. I think I even read that quote on the podcast. He didn't exactly praise Cam Thomas and Latarius Walton. Basically said, well, they did the best they could, you know. And it's obvious that that wasn't good enough. So they definitely need Tuitt back, get McClendon back over the nose, and get him back down to playing the 20 or so snaps, you know, 25 snaps that he's used to playing. But, I mean, as a whole, I mean, there's not a lot to complain about the defense, you know. Yeah, Cockrell got beat on that short touchdown, but, you know, you're going to get beat at times. Sure, Blake gave up his share of completions in the game to A.J. Green as well, too, and he's going to do that. He's already bumping his head on the ceiling quite a bit.
A.J. Green only averaged 10.7 yards a catch. I mean, look, at 11 for 118. He did have a long of 38, but he was targeted 17 times. He's an elite receiver, and, you know, seeing as you know, Eifert's the only other guy who had more than two catches, they completely shut down Jones and Sanu. I can't find fault with these guys for what they did out there.
Frame this however you want. Luck, allowing too deep of drives but getting turnovers at the right time. Frame it however you want to frame it. This defense is only allowing an average of 18.4 points a game through the team's first eight games. You would have had me committed or accused me of being back on the sauce again if I would have told you that at the beginning of the year.
No doubt. Speaking of narratives, I mean, you know, I said before the drive where the Steelers chose to punt and the not kick the field goal and the bad snap on first down. That was on Andy Dalton. And I said before that play, I said, this is a huge drive for Andy Dalton. You know, the team's down 10 to 6. And he's got, you know, there's whatever there was, 7 minutes left in the game. I said, this is a huge drive. You know, the narrative is going to come right back. If Andy Dalton loses this game and they go out like this, people are going to say, look, Dalton being Dalton, yeah, he had a stretch of six games this time rather than three where he played well, but he couldn't get it done against a good team in a big moment. And, you know, it's just who he is. And he fumbles the snap on the first play, and they lose 15 yards. And that was the chance there. Now, obviously, they drive down the field, and he then makes the worst decision ever and throws that interception. And I really thought that was, you know, going to be it. I thought the Steelers would kind of take control of the game from there and win it. And that's obviously not what happened. But, you know, what's the narrative coming out of the game of Andy Dalton? Is there anything to say to add to this year's story? Did he didn't play well, right?
No, he didn't. Look, we knew based on that NEA offensive stat that the Bengals have over nine.
Sorry, I think I got my drive sequences wrong in terms of when he lost 15 yards. That wasn't the first play of that series. But anyway, they went down the field and he made the terrible pass.
History tells you that he's coming. He's going to come back to earth. Right, he's going to get sacked. He's going to turn the ball over some moving forward, and that happened in this game against the Steelers. However, really, the narrative on Andy Dalton is going to be he could go 16-0 this season, David, and if he doesn't win in the first playoff game, then this is Andy Dalton. He put together an undefeated season, but what good is that if you can't win a game in the playoffs? So
let me ask you a couple things on the defense that I don't think they're big issues. It was the next sequence when Dalton fumbles the snap and it's a 15 yard loss back to his own nine, I think, and then they go incomplete, and that's when they throw deep and they make the play, and Mike Mitchell makes the interception. Some guys, there were people saying that Mitchell should have intentionally dropped the ball and stuff like that. I don't think that way. I mean, that's a third down play. It's not a fourth down play. If it's a fourth down play, maybe you can say that. But it's a third down play. But it turned out to be a good play for the Bengals, because what happened was obviously Mitchell makes the interception on a bomb, and then Robert Golden makes a really ill-advised block. And it turns out to be a 67-yard change of possession for them, whereas as opposed to punting from their own nine, the Steelers end up having the ball on their own 24. And you think if they're punting from their own nine, it's likely, if you net 41, that's at midfield. So it turned out that play actually didn't work. It really didn't work out to the Steelers' advantage, but I don't fault Mike Mitchell at all for that. I'm going to fault him for, but not that.
No, not in the least here. I mean, you got to take the turnovers when you can get it. You never know what's going to happen on, if they punt, if they have to punt, then your guy fumbles it. I mean, you got to take the turn, and you never know, you might be able to return that pick.
Right. If there's no block in the back, maybe the guy gets tackled, but he's out around midfield, so it was, I had no problem with that. But let me ask you two other things about Mike Mitchell. First of all, Mitchell and Debo, Mitchell gets a taunting penalty. Debo gets an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty. I mean,
silly.
I mean,
that's who Mike Mitchell is, though.
Okay, so let me get to the one that really pissed me off. When he hit Marvin Jones, it was as good and hard and nasty a hit as there can be. And it's that kind of violence is why football's so popular, and it also makes it scary. And I'm sure everybody's seen the hit on Ricardo Lockett. Same type of thing, as violent a hit as you can have. That really actually scared the living daylights out of me. I don't know what the update is on Lockett, but Marvin Jones is down on the ground. Now, Mike Mitchell, as soon as he hits him, sprints to the Steelers sideline and does a 30-second dance going crazy while Jones is down on the ground. And, people were commenting on Burfict celebrating when Le'Veon Bell's down and saying, he's celebrating him being injured. I don't know what Burfict was celebrating. It doesn't look good when a player's injured. I just thought Mike Mitchell's celebration was just so inappropriate. It was a great play. But he sprints 50 yards. I don't know if they showed it on television because I could see this in the press box. He sprints literally, 40 yards to the Steelers sideline, and then 10 yards away from there is dancing like, it's the Super Bowl. And I just don't get it.
Yeah, but that's who he is. That's been his M.O. I mean, I guess Steve Smith is not going to have a chance to cross him off of his hit list now, unfortunately. I'm obviously not on the field, but, I mean, the M.O. on Mike Mitchell has been that he's quite the talker, look, let your play speak. Your play speaks louder than words. But, is that going to be the last one that we see Mike Mitchell get in a Steelers uniform? Probably not, So, it's uncalled for, but, it is who he is. It's what makes him, what makes him who he is, I guess. So.
Yeah.
I don't like it. It was silly.
It was a first down play. It's first down, dude. You got two more plays. And then obviously you know, I said something at the time on Twitter, and I had a couple of people say, you know, don't, you know, you can't take the enthusiasm out of the game, or say, you know, what's wrong with that and whatever. And then, of course, Mitchell, two plays later, gets the taunting penalty, which cost the Steelers a possession. Now, the Bengals didn't end up scoring on it. But, I mean, that's a massive, you know, third and two at the 30. They don't convert, and all of a sudden it's first and 10 at the 45. And they ended up, you know, getting down to the Steelers 29, and the Steelers got a huge break. They had another fumbled snap that took them out of field goal position. So I don't get it. I didn't see Debo take his helmet off. I don't know if they showed that on television. I didn't notice it in the press box. Did you see it?
No, I did not. Of course, I wasn't looking for it either. All right, well, I mean, we've had a lot to talk about here in the first 44 minutes. What's the biggest narrative right now on this Monday?
Well, about the game? They've been really unlucky with injuries, and this is a big one. Is D'Angelo Williams Le'Veon Bell? No, but is D'Angelo Williams right now look like he's a kind of a back that can get the Steelers to the playoffs and more? Absolutely. I've liked what I've seen from D'Angelo Williams in the limited time that, you know, the first two games of the season, and obviously in the limited time he played, the half or so that he played yesterday. So is it a blow? Of course it's a blow. Losing every one of these guys has been a blow. But Ali Villanueva played a good game yesterday. I thought the Steelers offensive line as a whole had a really good game. You know, some penalties here and there, and it wasn't perfect, of course, but I thought they did well. So I think the Bell thing is certainly the takeaway, but I will also
bigger than Roethlisberger's playing.
Well, because it's long term. I mean, Ben, that's 1 week. I mean, if you're writing the game story, it's Ben's play was poor. That's the game story. But in terms of the big picture of the Steelers season, obviously Bell is the bigger story.
The Killer Bees. How appropriate was it that the Killer Bees were in their bumblebee looking throwbacks on Sunday? Because that was the first time all season they were on the field at the same time, and it lasted all of roughly 23 plays. Just absolutely brutal. The amount of guys that the Steelers have on IR right now, and the cap money, you know, nearly what, you know, $22 million in cap dollars tied up on IR right now. Look, I mean, I understand everybody fights the injury bug, but the Steelers sure have been bitten by it in the wrong places. So far this season, for sure.
Dave, one of the things I like to ask you about is, you know, and I know you haven't had a chance to do all the charting on this yet, but what did you think of the offensive line play in general?
I think same old problems. Problems hand passing off those stunts, yep, in those twists and getting on the same levels. Cody Wallace is Cody Wallace. Marcus Gilbert probably didn't have as good of game as you would like, but I still think he's playing great this year. I mean, obviously, the penalties are Ramon. It's a matter of semantics on the holding call on Ramon Foster, right? Because if Ramon Foster doesn't hold, does Ben rumble for 10 yards?
Yeah, he's, you know, definitely open the play up.
So call that one what you will. You had had a hold by Heath Miller, hold by Matt Spaeth in there, that hurt him. But, I mean, as a whole, I mean, I have no issues with the offensive line. Ben's going to get sacked two or three times a game. I mean, that's a given, right? Just because of kind of how he does still at times hold on to the football and insist on
Geno Atkins made some plays, Dunlop. They get some decent players on that defense too. So, they made some plays. We got what we wished for with the Oakland Raiders. I'm not sure we're wishing for the Oakland Raiders right now, though.
Boy, what a, you know, you thought this one was obviously a must-win game when you talk about the AFC North. And now, barring a miracle happening, the Steelers can kiss the AFC North goodbye. And look, they were going to be long shots had they even probably won this game, but at least we got a few more weeks to kind of talk about it, you know. But I think the AFC North's all but gone right now, and now, you know, some things did not go right in the Steelers' way in Week 8, and now you have the Steelers outside of the top six in the AFC seeding. In fact, they're in seventh right now behind Oakland and the New York Jets. The Raiders obviously beat the Jets. The Jets suffered injuries to both their quarterbacks in the game, so that's going to be interesting to watch. I think Brandon Marshall got dinged up in that game as well too. You had luckily Miami got, you know, look, we know who Miami is.
Let's go through the teams in the East. The Jets are still in it. The Bills are still in it at 3-4. Can't rule them out. I'm ruling out the Dolphins because they lost Wake and they've got a brutal schedule coming up. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Are you ruling?
Oakland's alive.
Well, in the North, ruling out the Browns and the Ravens. Done.
Oh yeah, Browns and Ravens. I mean, look, they have to run the tables, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Okay, so then the South, I'm not even worth talking about. I mean, whoever wins. And then
San Diego.
We're not ruling out the Chiefs because they beat the Steelers, so they're only a game behind them. You can't rule them out, right?
Right. I think
San
right
Diego
now.
Out.
I still wouldn't rule them out running the table. I mean, it's unlikely, but at 2-6.
And just had the tiebreaker against them. So they're three back.
Right.
So we got the Chiefs, the Raiders, the
Jets and Buffalo.
Jets and Buffalo. So you got five teams for two spots.
Right. And the Jets play. Well, I mean, let's run through the schedules real quick here. The Jets have, let's see.
I'll give you the Bills. The Bills have the Dolphins at home this week. Then they're at the Jets. They're at the Patriots, at the Chiefs. So that's going to decide their fate right there. Those three games on the road, at Jets, at Patriots, at Chiefs. They get the Texans at home, at Eagles, at Redskins, and then the Cowboys at home, and then the Jets the last game of the season. That looks like going to be too much for them. I think, you know, that's eight losses. I can't see them winning more than five out of eight of those games.
Who's that? Buffalo?
Yeah, five out of nine.
Yeah. The Jets, the Jaguars, one would figure that, you know, but look, we don't know the quarterback situation. They get the Jaguars at home in week nine. Then, as you already mentioned, the Bills and the Jets. Who are we rooting for in that game? Does it depend on what happens?
I think you're rooting for the Bills because the Jets have the easier schedule.
Okay, and then the Jets are at Houston. Then they host Miami, and then they play the Giants. In MetLife Stadium in week 13. So there's a decent chance the Jets could roll off 1, 2, 3, 4, at least four straight wins, right?
Yeah, there is a decent chance, although, as you pointed out, that quarterback situation is now a huge – I mean, yesterday's – I guess you just throw yesterday's game out if you're the Jets. I mean, that's not how they've played all year, and their defense just got shredded. They couldn't tackle. Carr was great. Now, here's the Raiders' schedule. Remember, they come in now right now. They're 4-3, so they're kind of in the catbird seat when you talk about the wild card games. They've got they're obviously at Pittsburgh this week. They've got the Vikings home. They're at the Lions, obviously winnable. They're at the Titans. That's winnable. They get the Chiefs home. Then their stretch of tough games, the last four is at Broncos. They get the Packers home. Then they get the Chargers home. And they're at Chiefs. I'll tell you right now, if I'm betting on two teams to make the wild card, I might be picking the Steelers and the Raiders.
And here's the Chiefs. They're on a bye right now coming back from England. Then they get that nasty Denver Broncos defense, right? I mean, that's a
– Yep.
How shocking will that be if they beat Denver at Denver?
And but let's say it, because we've ripped them all year long. Peyton was really good last night.
Really was. I had to check clock on my computer to see what year it was. after Denver, they play on the road against San Diego. I mean, look, say what you will. Phillip Rivers on the field, I'm always worried about losing to the San Diego Chargers. Then they play Buffalo. So there is an outside chance. And then the Raiders. I mean, there is a chance that the Chiefs lose three of their next four games.
Yeah,
right?
We'll find out who the Chiefs are here in the next. Because, you know, look, the answer is in those head-to-head matchups of teams we're talking about, somebody's going to lose. So that's good for the Steelers. Somebody's going to lose.
Now you know what our listeners are going to say, David.
Somebody's going to
lose. We don't care about that. The Steelers just have to take care of their own business.
Oh, I care about it.
I do, too. I love scoreboard watching. I'm sad that we're at scoreboard watching in week eight for a wild card spot,
yeah,
though.
Right.
I usually like to reserve that kind of stuff for, like, week 12 and on. All right, let me ask you this. If the Steelers lose on Sunday to the Oakland Raiders, will they make the playoffs?
Yeah, I still think they will. I But the world's going to get a lot tougher, because if they lose to the Raiders at home, then we're going to have a whole nother set of questions about why they lost and you know, what can this team do? I do think we can legitimately ask questions about the offense. Ben, you know, your thesis turned out to be correct, however we want to phrase it. But your idea that, you know, he wouldn't play well, and I thought he'd play great, he didn't play well. And Ben needs to play well. And he needs to play well this week. I mean, he's got to have a good game. And if the Steelers lose this game, well, then what? They get the Browns, and then things don't. Then things get a little dicey. They go on the road, and they get some tough games.
Then you obviously don't consider this game this week against the Raiders as a quote unquote must win.
Well,
so with that,
you know what? I didn't consider last week's game a must win, but I now consider these next two must wins, because you want to have room to stumble a little bit down the stretch. I mean, you want to have a margin for error, and if they lose to the Raiders, well, then their margin for error becomes basically one game.
All right, well, on a scale of one.
How about their AFC record? Would be a disaster. You know, every one of their wins this year has been against a team from a West division. They got three against the NFC West and one against the AFC West. This is the AFC West. So continue that trend. You got five wins against the West, and you finally get a division, a conference, you know, second conference win. Because this is a conference problem they're going to have here if they lose this one.
Yeah, 1-4 right now in the conference. And look, I mean, that game, regardless of which Peyton Manning shows up in that game against the Broncos, that defense is for real.
Yeah, Steelers, that's not going to be a fun game to play right before Christmas. So let's just look at the schedule for the Steelers. So you got Raiders, Browns at home. Let's give them two wins, 6-4. I don't believe in the Seahawks. I don't think they're good, but I'm not going to say that's a win. So let's say that's a loss. You're 6-5. We'll see what happens with the Colts. They got a big game tonight. We'll call it a toss-up. Let's say they win 1 of 2 with the Colts at home and at the Bengals. So that's 7-6. If you lose to the Broncos at home, you're 7-7 with two games left, you know, at Baltimore and at Cleveland. That's not where you want to be.
No, you don't want to be 9-7.
So all of a sudden I'm saying, yeah, this is a must-win game here with the Raiders.
Okay, I would agree. You got to go into the bye on a 2-game winning streak, and then get ready to go out to Seattle. I really think. I mean, I just don't think you can, because look, we all circled this game against the Raiders and game against the Browns as a win, right?
Yep.
Prior to the start of the season. Now, are the Raiders playing better than anybody thought? Absolutely. It's going to be a tough game. I mean, I didn't think this would be the one that we're sitting here worried about like we are right now, for sure. If they split, that they might be in trouble. And obviously, if they lose both of them, boy, we're going to make for some long.
Anything to take away from the number of injuries yesterday was not a pretty day. Le'Veon Bell, Reggie Bush, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Matt Forte, Calvin Johnson, Kiri Robinson, Steve Smith Sr., you know, a bunch of other guys. Obviously, the hit on Ricardo Lockett was nasty.
Every week you have these, it's just the names.
Yeah, bigger players.
The quality of the names definitely changed, that's for sure. I'm not so concerned. I mean, look, Jordan Todman, I think, is a I could choose worse second-string running backs, I think, at this point. Obviously, we hope he doesn't have to get onto the field much, but I think the Steelers are going to have to spell D'Angelo, right, at some point?
Yeah, for sure. And do you agree with me on what I said up top? I mean, they can't really if they sign Isaiah Pede, they have to make a roster move, right? So I don't.
Yeah, well, and the way that happened, Jerry Dulac got duped by one of those fake Twitter accounts.
Oh. Okay.
And then, but Pete is supposedly coming in. He didn't sign last night. You know,
got it. Yeah, because you would have to announce a move. Yeah. So
now does that mean he's going to get signed on Tuesday? More than likely. I mean, Tuesday starts the work week, right?
So, yeah, Wednesday. But they'll get him in Tuesday. Look, you're going to put. It's just take one more look at Le'Veon Bell's knee, make sure you know he's out for the season, and put him on IR, and then you make the move.
And how quick are you going to get Pete up to speed anyway?
He's a special teams player this weekend.
You know, if he can even dress and do that. And are you taking Todman off of special teams? That's a good question.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, I guess. You know, not a good day for Drew.
Ask Tom on that one.
Not a good
slip that one in with your time management.
I don't even know what to say to Mike about the question. I don't even know if I'm going to ask that question. Just ask him if he could do it again, if he'd do it the same way, and his answer is going to be yes.
You gotta
lay it in there.
Ask him something about a Madden simulator. that'll get him. That'll have some heads exploding there.
No other injuries of note, I guess.
Do you try to get Dree Archer on the field, some offensive snaps here?
Dree was not good. Here's a quick one for you. We only got like 30 seconds. Mike Mitchell's in the concussion protocol. What's he doing running on the field with his helmet trying to get in there on that third down play? Schmarka's out there for a couple plays, and Mitchell's running out there. I mean, there's no way he was going to make it. So fortunately, somebody either got to him or he realized he's not going to be able to get there. They're going to get too many men on the field penalty. So he came running back off the field. But he's in the concussion protocol. I mean, why does he have his helmet? Why is he running on the field?
He was not living in his fears. And you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David on Twitter at David M. Todd. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. You can email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. The show was so great today, you're going to want to donate. Go to SteelersDepot.com. You'll see the donate button. That says donate, not donuts. You're not buying donuts there. You're donating. David, we're right up against it. You better get us out of here.
As always, thanks for listening to The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.